Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this podcast, we'll be featuring Greg Thomas, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing for steelhead in Queen Charlotte Islands and the Dean River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're going to be broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Greg Thomas about fly fishing for steelhead. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects and by doing so give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Greg, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Look for that link under Greg's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And their website is frontrangeanglers.com. And that certificate can be redeemed either in the store or online at their online store. So here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And that question is going to be something that Greg and I talk about during the show. You've got to submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use best typing skills, and maybe you'll win that $20 gift certificate. And also, it's kind of a special thing tonight because I'm in Colorado and Greg's in Colorado. There's a big ISE show, International Sportsman's Exhibition show, in Denver this weekend, and we're going to be giving away some tickets to that show to people that are in the local area, and we'll use our database to find those people and see if we can't give away a few free tickets to attend the show. Well, tonight our guest is Greg Thomas. And Greg Thomas is a writer and a photographer with credits in the New York Times, the Seattle Times, Outside, Forbes, Big Sky Journal, and Field & Stream. He currently serves as managing editor for Fly Rod & Reel, and owns the website Angler's Tonic, which is www.anglerstonic.com. Greg was born in Southeast Alaska and lived in Western Washington until he headed off to college in Montana to play basketball. He resided in Missoula, the Bitterroot Valley, the Gallatin Canyon, Boise, Jackson, Wyoming, and Sun Valley. During his travels around the West, Greg penned several titles, including Fly Fisher's Guide to Washington, Bible Montana, River Journal Clark Fork, and Best Flies for Idaho. He's currently writing three books, Couch Surfing Through Trout Heaven, Irish Lords and the Devil's Thumb, and an untitled tome on steelhead. Despite moving to the inland northwest, Greg hasn't lost his interest in steelhead. He chases them as close to home as Idaho on the Salmon and Clearwater Rivers and as far away as south central Alaska. But his favorite steelhead waters rest in British Columbia on the Queen Charlotte Islands and on the central coast. If he had to pick one river to fish the rest of his life, he would rebel and pick two: the Yacoon on Graham Island and the Dean on the Central Coast. Greg currently lives in Ennis, Montana, near the banks of the Madison River with his two daughters, Tate and Micah. Greg, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. I'm always excited to talk fish and all things fishing. but I'm especially excited to talk about steelhead. They're probably my favorite fish in the world, so this is great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you, and thanks for sticking us in here. I know you're going to be speaking at the ISC show tomorrow or in the next couple of days, so I know you've got several heavy days ahead of you, but we'll squeeze this in just before the show and be good for it. So, well, you know, you wanted to talk about two different areas that you had visited recently and had great success at, Queen Charlotte Islands and the Dean River. And by the way, folks, if you want to see where these are, again, if you go to Google and then you go up to the left-hand corner and click on Maps and you type in Queen Charlotte Islands, Canada, or Dean River, Canada, then you'll see where in the world we're talking about. But to try to give us an orientation, because we do have people all over the world listening to the show, Greg, so give us an idea of where these places are.
Okay, starting with the Queen Charlotte Islands, it's in North America, just north of the United States and south of Alaska. So northern British Columbia, off of the west coast of British Columbia, almost directly west from the port of and the town of Prince Rupert. So quite a ways up there, but easily reachable. You can get to the Queen Charlottes by getting to Vancouver, British Columbia first, and then taking a flight either on Air Canada or Pacific Coastal Airlines up to a town called Masset. And it's about a two-hour flight, maybe at the most, very scenic, but again, easily reachable. And then the Dean River is, again, north of the United States and about halfway up the British Columbia coast in Canada. And actually, inland, just a hair, it's not directly on the coast. I think the Dean River Channel, which leads into the mouth of the Dean River, is about 30 miles long, so it's a saltwater inlet. But again, relatively easy to reach, a little bit more jumping off. You can fly from Vancouver, British Columbia, to a town called Bella Coola, and then you can take a helicopter or a small airplane into a kind of rustic landing strip. You can also get there by flying from Vancouver, or anywhere else for that matter, to Williams Lake, British Columbia, which is located almost dead center in the province, and then flying west out to, again, that rustic airstrip to get to the Dean. It's more remote than the Queen Charlotte Islands, just a little bit more difficult to reach, and there isn't a city based near the river, so you're pretty much out there when you get there.
Let's focus just a little bit on Queen Charlotte specifically, and then we'll move on to the Dean, and then we'll talk about, you know, equipment, fly strategies, and so forth there. So starting out with Queen Charlotte, where, you know, you've got an island out there in the Pacific, or many islands, I guess, chained together. What, once you arrive there, how do you fish? Where do you fish amongst the islands?
Okay, well, there's actually two main islands, and one to the south is called Moresby, and then the larger island to the north is called Graham. And my suggestion for anglers visiting the Queen Charlottes for the first time would be to fly to Graham Island in the town of Masset. And once you get there, there are several lodges that operate out of that area. And my recommendation, at least for the first time that anyone goes up there, would be to book with one of the lodges and get some guided fishing there. It is something that people could do on their own also. It just takes more logistics. But the infrastructure is there with motels and vehicle rentals and such.
So that was one of Nate Miles' questions. Nate Miles in Denver asked, you know, which rivers provide good public access for anglers without a guide and which towns would offer the best base camp. So would that Masset be a place to base out if you were going to do this on your own at one point?
You could base out of Masset. What I did was when I flew in, I stayed at a place called Masset House, and that's a fly fishing specific lodge. And with their operation, it was really cool. You know, nice arrangements there to stay in. They would provide the meals for you. And then you could pretty much take a vehicle, which was a sweet F-250 brand-new Ford pickup truck, four-wheel drive, and you could head out, and it was about an hour and a 20-minute drive each way to get to the Yacoon River, which is the most noted steelhead stream on the Queen Charlottes. So you'd take that drive in the morning, and you'd be provided with a map and a GPS, and you could find the places to access the river and go in and fish wherever you wanted. And then as soon as you felt like you'd had enough of it, you could get in the vehicle again and drive back to Masset and expect a nice, you know, really nice meal waiting for you whenever you got there. Masset is, as I said, about an hour and 20-minute drive from most of the good holes on the Yacoon. So another option, and I know this was one of the questions, you could get to a little town called Port Clements, and you could take a taxi or some type of shuttle off an airline flight to Masset, get out to there, rent a motel room at Port Clements, rent a vehicle there too, and I think you'd only be about 25 minutes away from, you know, the prime stomping grounds there on the Yacoon. So a guy could do a self-guided trip, and in fact, I have a friend from Calgary, Alberta, who's up there doing that right now, and I'll be interested to hear his experiences when he gets back.
So is it strictly wading, no floating on these rivers, Queen Charlotte?
No, actually, with a small watercraft, say, you know, pontoon boat or a watermaster, which is a great, you know, single-person rubber raft, you could easily float that river in any water condition. The prime season runs from late October to the beginning of March, and during that time in the Pacific Northwest, you know, the water conditions and weather conditions can vary considerably. So you may get up there and find the river to be running, you know, real high and fast, and that would allow somebody to take a bigger boat. People do float that in, actually, aluminum drift boats, full-size aluminum drift boats, when the water conditions merit. To be on the safe side, you know, a smaller raft, you could get away with floating at any time.
Jeff Bandy in Edmonds, Washington had asked about drift boats. So do they have those up there that you could use during the high water situations? Or?
I don't think so. I think no? The only drift boats that are available up there are, you know, if you were with a lodge, that's the option you would have. But, you know, a person could certainly take up one of those personal watercrafts and get away with it. But I'll tell you what, if I go up there again, which I obviously will, my idea would be to either stay with a lodge and fish with them again or to base out of Port Clements, and I would wade fish. Mm-hmm. That river is very accessible to a wade fisherman. You can cover almost all of it. It's not real broad. It's not considered big. You can get away with using a single-hand fly rod there, or you could use a small switch rod, a light switch rod, and wade carefully and cover so much of that water. So I don't know that a boat is necessary for success. In fact, I know it isn't. It's just, you know, something different to do.
So when you were up there this last time, did you use a boat at all, or did you just wade?
Not a bit, just waded.
Just waded, okay. And what kind of success did you have there in the Queen Charlotte?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about my trip up there was I saw one angler during 6 days that I was up there, and that was another angler that was at a lodge, my friend from Calgary. To do that on a stream where it's strictly wild steelhead and the size range goes from, you know, an average of maybe 8 or 10 pounds all the way up to, you know, plus 25 pounds, to have that opportunity in this day and age is just remarkable. That really stood out on this trip. A couple other things. The Northwest coastal art up there is just incredible, and I really had a nice chance to look at it. You can't miss it. It's all over the island. Really cool stuff. And one other thing that happened up there I think the listeners will find interesting is that a couple nights during winter, the correct combination of tides and high winds from the north will create the situation where on the broad northern beaches of the islands, it'll wash all these razor clams and weather vane scallops, which are the largest in the world, and octopus and rock scallops up onto the beach. And people can literally drive down the beach and pick these live clams and octopus and scallops up off the beach and just fill up a pickup truck. Mm. And it happened while I was up there, and we got a lot of seafood and were able to eat that each night that we were up there. It was phenomenal. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is cool. So how was the fishing, Queen Charlotte?
Okay, the fishing was great. We were up there at a time that was considered late in the run, and the people who run the lodge actually wondered if we would find fresh fish in the river. And we were up there the first week of March, considered very late, and we caught some fish that didn't have a speck of color on them, that were just chrome bright. It just moved in on tides, and you know, you couldn't ask for better fish. We caught them up to maybe 17 or 18 pounds. And, you know, none of these fish were on their spawning beds or anything. There's actually the upper portion of the Yacoon is closed because the majority of the fish will go up there to spawn. And I love that having that regulation. There's no need to harass steelhead while they're on their beds. So these fish are all just in great shape. The river, as I said, was, you know, perfect for a two-handed switch rod, and that's what I fished up there. I was up there and found some real nice clear water conditions and actually rose a fish on a skated dry fly in early March, so winter steelhead on a skated dry fly. And I think that if I had done fished more in that fashion instead of underneath the surface most of the time, I could have raised a few more fish on that. And that to me was just a phenomenally unique experience.
We have questions come in over the internet here, Greg, as we're talking. And one, Ed Templeton, asks, how are you spelling Yakum River? Is it Y-A-K-U-M, or how is that spelled?
Yeah, it's pronounced the Yakun.
Oh, Yakun.
And it's spelled Y-A-K-O-U-N.
Y-A-K-O-U-N. Okay, so there you go, Ed.
Ann is in Nancy.
Right, right.
Yep. I wanted to add something before we move on, but there are other rivers to fish up there, of course. There's a bunch of remote rivers located on the west side of the islands that I don't think anyone fishes unless one of the lodge operations does it and doesn't really, you know, advertise that. But on Graham Island, real accessible rivers are the Yakun and the Mammon, and there's also a river called the Tellel, and it's spelled T-L-L-E-L. The Mammon is M-A-M-I-N. And on the Tellel, I did not fish that, but I really want to get back and take a hike in there and fish it, because one gentleman that I met up there said he'd already landed 30-some steelhead for the season on the Tellel, so it must get a good run. And another thing, it's also well-known for sea-run cutthroats, and as are the entire islands, and we caught some dandy sea-run cutthroats while we were fishing the Yakun for steelhead. And the sea-run cutthroat is an amazing fish, typically run between, you know, 12 to 16 inches, but we caught them up to like 18 inches and heavy, so really, really nice, beautifully colored fish.
Geraldo in Boise, Idaho asks about fishing licenses. He says, is there any additional fees up there on BC rivers other than Canadian fishing license?
Well, on a lot of the BC rivers, they're rated as class 1, 2, or 3, and they do require additional fees each day. And I tried to get online and find the information before we came on air here, and I didn't find it. But my recollection is that the Yakun is a Class 2 river. I could be wrong here. Everyone should check the regulations thoroughly and make sure that, you know, all this fits into their budget, you know, even the daily fees. I can't remember what they were, if there were any, but it wasn't phenomenal. And I can say that, you know, paying that amount of money, which I think was probably under $20 a day, was well worth it. And in comparison to what you know, maybe pay to play a golf course, I mean, the trade-off was phenomenal. So
yeah.
I wouldn't let that hold me back if I was fishing the Queen Charlottes, that's for sure.
Yeah, you pay all that money to get there. So I think they're just interested in what those costs might be. Well, good. We need to take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk with Greg Moore and move on to the Dean River. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at frontrangeanglers.com. That's frontrangeanglers.com. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Greg Thomas about fly fishing for steelhead. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Greg, at this point in the show, I always ask my guests, what's happening in your fly fishing world? Tell us a little bit about what you're involved with and share with us.
Yeah, Roger, well, right now in my fly fishing world, I'm a bit frustrated. That's because it has been darn cold in Montana where I live this year where I live, and I'm just jonesing to get out on the water with a fly rod, and I haven't been able to do it yet this year, and I drove past so many rivers in the last week, and most of them are flowing ice. So that's the main thing, is I'm a frustrated angler. I want to be on the water. I know there's steelhead out
there. Go south, young man. Go south.
It is steelhead time, Roger. I am an addict, and I really want to get over to the Clearwater and Salmon Rivers in Idaho here soon, and then plan a trip up to BC in February. But in the meantime, I'm keeping busy with the website that you mentioned, Angler's Tonic, which is www.anglerstonic.com. And if any of the listeners aren't familiar with it, you know, it's a real variety. My tagline on it is life on and off the water. So there's a variety of interesting categories that you don't find on the other sites. I have a section called Road Tunes, and we review a lot of music ranging from, you know, all the way from Johnny Cash to Irish punk bands like Flogging Molly. I have a section in there called the Absinthe Lounge, which is just kind of wild stories that are a little bit longer than what you typically find on a website. And I always, you know, tell the readers to print it out, find your favorite easy chair, grab a cigar or a glass of whiskey or whatever you like to drink, and sit back and have a good read. You know, there's some very good writers that contribute to that. Troy Leatherman in Alaska, Ted Leeson in Oregon, Seth Norman in Washington State, to name a few. And I also am keeping busy with my duties with Fly Rod and Reel. As you mentioned, I'm the managing editor. And our editor, who's done a great job over the last few years building the magazine back to what it had been, which, in my opinion, is the best fly fishing publication going, especially, you know, specifically in the United States, he resigned. He took a position with a boarding school in Vermont, a decision made to the benefit of his young family. And so my duties are increasing with the magazine, and I'm hoping maybe if I'm fortunate that I'd get bumped up into that leadership role with the magazine. So keeping busy with that, loving the duties I have here with International Sportsman's Expositions. I'm going to speak tomorrow on Western Steelhead, and there'll be just a ton of great images, some from the Queen Charlotte, some from the Dean, others from the Grand Ronde in Washington State, both of the Idaho rivers that I mentioned previously, the Deschutes and the Clackamas in Oregon. And then I'll do a presentation on Friday on overlooked trout in the Northern Rockies. And then again there on Saturday I'll do my Steelhead presentation and sit in on a panel for planning trips around the globe and what people need to do to make those trips successful for them. And then on the side, I'm doing work for Outdoor Life and Field and Stream and trying to secure a deal right now for that Steelhead book that you mentioned earlier. So I'm keeping pretty busy. And then finally, I just am spending 1 week on and 1 week off with my daughters, Tate, who's 6, and Micah, who's 3, who are just the best things in my life. And I take them outdoors all the time, having a blast. And people who get familiar with my website will see lots of images of them, ranging from anything from Christmas strolls to duck hunting to being on the water fishing with those girls. So they're going to be young outdoors women, and hopefully it'll sink it in as a lifelong passion, and they'll do it forever. And one quick note about the ISE shows that I'm doing. I grew up in North Seattle. Nobody there that was my age, you know, hunted or fished in my high school. But I was fortunate enough to have a family that was interested in outdoor sports, and they instilled, you know, a lot of respect for wildlife in me and a passion for the sports. And they took me to these ISE shows when I was young, and it just set my mind to dreaming about all the possibilities in the outdoors all over the world. And so I encourage any of the listeners, just individually or with their families, that there's so much at the ISE shows that is entertaining to, you know, if you have the chance and can do it, bring your family out and get them involved.
Terrific, terrific. Well, thanks for sharing with us. Yeah, sounds like you are very busy. That's a good way to be, though.
Yeah.
As long as you can squeeze in your fishing.
Better than the alternative, and I will squeeze the fishing in, don't worry.
Okay. Let's talk about the Dean River now. I know this is one of your favorite places, and again, you had already told us where it is and how to get there. Now, you know, it sounded like the Queen Charlotte Islands we could do on our own, or we could go to a lodge and so forth. Is that the same with the Dean River, or is this a totally different situation?
It's not entirely different. There are do-it-yourself options, and the Canadian government and Minister of Fisheries issues a limited number of permits each year for people to float the river. And they can do that, and they can camp on the banks, and they can fish. To do that takes probably someone who's already done it. You'd need someone very experienced and a massive amount of preparation. It would also be, you know, quite expensive because you're looking at, you know, several flights to get in there, all the gear, all the food, and you're out there on your own, and you're in grizzly country. You need to keep a clean camp and everything. It's not my recommendation. I mean, I know that there's people out there that are hardcore and could do it. And if that's so, maybe that's for them. But the lodge option is really the best option on the Dean River, as far as I'm concerned, to go up there and get some instruction, you know, to be moved around on the river quite freely, whether that's by, you know, a boat or running up on logging roads on four-wheelers, quads, and accessing, you know, specific stretches of the river that way. I mean, what a blast. And then you've got a nice, comfortable, you know, cabin to lodge in, and people, you know, cooking your meals and taking care of you while you're up there. It's a pretty sweet deal.
Now, you said float, so this is one that could be, is floated, obviously. But when you were up there, were you wading or floating yourself?
It was a mix. I stayed with a lodge that's owned by Andrew Bennett, and it's called BC West. And they had a really neat routine because they'd split the anglers in camp in half, and half would go by boat each day and fish the very lowest section of the river all the way down to tidewater. And this was below a massive set of falls. the other anglers would get on quads, and they could drive upstream above the falls and fish various runs at their will. And I enjoyed both options. The quad running was just a lot of fun and put us in on some great runs, caught a ton of fish. And then, in contrast, you know, getting in the boats with a guide and having him take you down the river and drop you off on particular productive runs, and then, you know, go and drop off the other anglers and only come back if you wanted instruction or had questions or needed a photo of a big fish. I liked it because it wasn't a guide standing over your shoulder critiquing every cast that you made. You were pretty much on your own unless you wanted instruction, and then you could have as much instruction and direction as you cared to have. So I thought it was just a outstanding, you know, mix at BC West. And on top of that, you know, the cabins were rustic but very comfortable. We had running water. It was cold water, but in our cabins, and community showers. And then the main lodge, you would go there and dine, and it was like eating at, you know, a five-star restaurant every single day. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds like a great place to stay. And like you said, and, you know, it's one thing to drag your drift boat, you know, a few hundred miles here in the West and drop it in a river and float for a day or two, but getting all that equipment, I know I do a lot of rafting, and I've done the Grand Canyon for 21 days, and I know the logistics involved in that, but that can get intense and expensive to try to do something like that yourself on a float basis. So I appreciate you sharing those issues, because...
Well, you can drown in a mud puddle, too.
Yeah.
And you can drown on a big coastal river easy. And so it's no place for anyone who isn't, you know, very well schooled in handling a boat. And there is at least one rapid on that river that's not passable. So anyone who might try and float all the way to tidewater would have to portage. So another thing to think about.
Yeah, yeah. Now, since we're talking about lodges and so forth, Josh Wainwright in Cabin John, Maryland, wrote in and he said, "The Dean is just one of many famous rivers in Canada that have hundreds of books and articles written about them. But just when the reader has taken the bait and is living and dreaming about that 3 or 4 day trip, the reality of severe overpricing raises his ugly head. Is there any way for a middle-class guy to afford it?"
Yes, absolutely. Save some money.
Save some money.
It's a priority. And I'll tell you what, if you're a steelhead angler and you want to taste the best of it in the most beautiful setting that I've ever fished steelhead, you could make it a goal and set some money aside and make some concessions now, so that you can do that trip later. It is a lifetime trip. And honestly, it's not overpriced. I don't know what overpriced is. It's, you know,
well, what does it cost up there for? And what's the average trip length?
Well, yeah, it's not 3 or 4 days. It's 6. And,
okay.
And it would have to go and review what the lodge pricing right now is, though, because I don't know it offhand, but $5,000 or $6,000 for that,
okay,
for that trip.
I like going to Alaska or whatever.
It's like going to Alaska or, you know, cheaper than Russia, cheaper than the Seychelles, about the same as going down to Mexico. Well, maybe a little bit more than going to Mexico, but like I said, it's worth it. It's probably the best trip that I've ever been involved with from a, you know, lodge standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's overpriced. I think you get what you pay for, and you get a lot with this. I started adding it up while I was up there, and those meals alone, it was just phenomenal. We would eat a breakfast super early in the morning. We'd head out on the river. We'd fish until we came back for lunch, and then we'd have basically, you know, a five-star dinner as our lunch. Then we'd go out for the rest of the day and fish at our heart's content and come back in the evening to have cocktails together and eat some heavy hors d'oeuvres. And, you know, it was pretty neat, too. I've been in lodges, particularly in Russia, you know, where the anglers really got into their cups. And I like to tip them back as much as anybody, but I think all the guys on the Dean realized what a unique, you know, wonderful experience we had out in front of us. So we know there's other times to really get after it. And, you know, it's not like we didn't have fun or have a couple cocktails, but everyone got to bed at a good time, and we got up early and just fished hard and drank the real experience in as much as we could. So,
well, tell us about the fishing there. What was the fishing like on the Dean?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that people had told me before I got up there that the Dean River fish are different than any other steelhead you'll ever catch. And I didn't know exactly what they were talking about. But I'd only been fishing the Dean that first day for about 25 minutes before I hooked up on the first fish. And I knew what they meant, because it felt like the steelhead took, as it was already going full speed downstream. There's no hesitation. There's no tap, tap, tug, tug, any of that. It's just the fish is on, and it is running full stream, full steam ahead, either across the stream or straight downstream, and you're just hanging on for dear life, hoping that in those first, you know, 5 or 10 seconds that you don't lose it. And once you can get the fish, you know, through that first run, you know, they just run and they jump and they're everywhere. They're chrome bright. They're fresh in from the ocean. They're as strong as any steelhead you'll ever find. But if you can beat them on that first run, then you can start working them back up the run. And they'll make a couple more good pulls, but you can get them to the bank. And as far as the fishing goes, things have been a little bit down on the Dean for several years. And steelhead fishing is cyclical. And the good news is that in a lot of places in the West right now, the fishing is good, and that should continue for the foreseeable future. And so last year was the first year that the Dean really, really clicked in several years, and people are calling it the best year in the last decade. And we happened to be there during the best week of last year. And so as a group, a six-man group, and Andrew, the lodge owner, was part of that, so he didn't fish as often as the rest of us. But as a six-person group, we landed 77 steelhead that week out of 128 hooked. And one fellow, Michael White, he's a rep for a bunch of great brands, including Sims, he was up there, and he caught 28 alone out of the 32 that he hooked. And I'd have to go back and look at the records, because you do keep catch cards for the fisheries department up there, but I believe that at the end of the third day, I'd already beached 13 chrome bright steelhead. It was phenomenal.
Sounds great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Definitely, yeah.
Well, I felt like I was in a dream. And I had said, you know, Greg, you were super lucky, you know, to have gained this opportunity to fish the Dean River, which I'd wanted to do for 15 years and hadn't been able to pull it off. And I did it last year. And I had said before I even started on the trip, if I get up there and I catch one Dean River steelhead, I'm going to be happy. If I really get into them, I'm going to be ecstatic. And we flew from Vancouver to Bella Coola. We had a great night in Bella Coola getting all our gear ready. And then we took a helicopter flight over the Coast Range in British Columbia. Just phenomenal. Passing glaciers, going through passes that drop off 4,000 vertical feet as you go over them. Just looking at incredible wild scenery. And then, you know, to land on that remote strip and be shuttled off the lodge, I thought to myself, you know, your trip's already, you know, great. And even if you didn't catch steelhead, you'd be a spoiled individual if you weren't thankful for the opportunity. And it just got better from that point on. And you asked about the fishing. I want to make sure that I describe the fish. They are chrome bright. Some of them we caught, you know, within 400 yards of the salt water, just coming in on the tides. They're like no other steelhead. I mean, in British Columbia, a lot of people focus on the Terrace and Smithers area, the Babeen, the Sestet, the Kispiox, all those famous rivers. And they have really large steelhead in them. And they're great fish, there's no doubt about it. But by the time that the fish get to the sections of the rivers where people can successfully fish them with flies, you know, those fish have colored up and they've been in the water for a time and they're in a deteriorated state. The fish on the Dean come in and are immediately available to the fly. And so you're catching these fish that are in the greatest shape of any steelhead you've ever seen, all of them carrying sea lice and just this mint bright coloration. So the fish are phenomenal. I wanted to make sure that I pointed that out. And they ran between, we caught some smaller ones that, I don't know, I caught one that may have been 4 or 5 pounds, but we caught them up to 16 or 17 pounds also, and every one of them a rocket. So,
now, what is the general feeling up there, both in Queen Charlotte's and the Dean River area, about, you know, the steelhead runs? Do they feel they're coming back, or is it just the cycle, or, you know, are things getting better or getting worse? What's their thoughts?
Well, I think some of the fisheries are improving. Some of it's cyclical. Some of it's from better regulation on the commercial fishing for salmon, because the steelhead are a bycatch in many of those gill nets, you know, especially up north, you know, on the Babeen and Skeena and such. I'm not the best person to speak on this, but that's my general impression. On the Queen Charlottes, I think the runs are stable. I have a definite problem with the Minister of Fisheries allowing anglers to use bait on those rivers. I have nothing against anglers using conventional tackle, and I know that there are a lot of conventional anglers out there who use, you know, single barbless hooks and are as interested in the future of the species as any fly fisher, and I believe there's strength in numbers, so I welcome those people to associate with us and for us all to be friendly with each other. But using bait on a steelhead stream where it's wild fish and they don't come back in massive numbers is just idiotic at this stage in, you know, fisheries management. So I think that the runs on the Queen Charlottes are sound. I think that everyone's very optimistic and happy about the Dean River, especially because of the returns this past year. I know that in the last couple of years, the returns on steelhead farther north up in that terrace area have been wonderful. So I'm hesitant to say that steelhead are in great shape, but I think that, you know, there are some reasons to be happy right now and optimistic.
Good, good. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll start talking about equipment, flies, and get into the nuts and bolts of how you're fishing up there. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for the top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call the Platte River Fly Shop at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Greg Thomas about fly fishing for steelhead in British Columbia. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Greg, we've got several questions that came in here on equipment. Martin Coleman, Lawrence, Kansas, and others all ask about, you know, what kind of rods do you take up there? Do you take a variety? What weight, what length? What do you got in your bag there?
Okay, well, certainly you take multiple rods. You can't do a trip like that and run the possibility of breaking a rod, especially if you're doing it on your own and you don't have a lodge that could support you or other anglers in camp who might be able to loan or sell you a rod. So you take multiple rods, and usually on these trips, you know, I'll take three or four. You know, the rivers there in the Queen Charlotte's, you know, easily manageable with a single-hand rod. I don't think I took one up there. I'm really into the spey fishing movement, and I never thought I'd be that way. I dated a girl several years back, and her father was a classic old steelheader from Oregon, and he, you know, just as the spey rod movement got going, he would be like, why in the hell would anyone fish one of those massive meat sticks? Because if you hooked a fish, you wouldn't even feel it fighting. And all the steelhead are located right next to the bank anyways. These people are crazy. So I kind of, you know, adopted that mindset for a while. But when I finally did start throwing a spey rod, it was just like almost rejuvenating my passion, because there's so many new casts to learn. It's fun. It's like when I played basketball. You know, I could shoot 100 free throws, turn around, shoot 100 more, and not quit until my mom said, hey, it's dinner time. You know, just trying to master that craft and try over and over, and then to get the feeling right and just start rocket launching these casts is just a wonderful feeling. So I'm kind of into the spey rod deal. I probably won't be taking single-hand sticks on many steelhead trips in the future. But up on the Queen Charlotte, you could get away with a single-hand spey rod. You could do the same on the Dean River, for that matter, but you aren't going to reach all the fish. I like a two-handed switch rod, say a 12 or 13-foot 7 or 8 weight would be just ideal for snapping off some casts on the Yakun and the other streams up there in the Queen Charlottes. The Dean River, of course, is much larger, and many of the fish we found were holding out in the fast water in the middle of the river, and it was a long cast to reach that, and they would follow the fly from there and take it somewhere, you know, between mid-river and the bank. So I fished a 13-foot 8 weight up there, and then I also fished a smaller switch rod. I think it was a 12-foot 7. And both of those rods performed nicely. But on the Dean, you could get away with going, you know, big-time 14-foot 8 or 9 weight, and you wouldn't be overgunned. So those are the rods that I like right now that I would be packing up there to do a steelhead trip. And kind of going back to the older fellow that fished steelhead, that I was talking about, my old girlfriend's dad, regarding the fight, you know, those sea run cutthroats that we caught up in the Queen Charlottes put a good bend in a light spey rod. And the steelhead on the Dean, I mean, it's not like you don't know you have a fish on. They fight like crazy, so I think that's a mute point. I think that you get as much a fight on a two-handed stick as you would on the single-handers.
Now, Josh wrote in, Josh Wainwright, and asked about reasonably priced spay rod. Any recommendations you might have about that?
Yeah, one specifically. You know, one thing that's happened with the downturn in the economy is that many of the fly fishing product manufacturers are making nice lines of equipment that doesn't cost that much in comparison, you know, to the old days when everybody was flush, and one of those companies is Reddington. It doesn't matter if you know, buy waders, wading boots, you know, sportswear, I mean, nice shirts that you could wear on the stream or off, or rods or reels from them. They have great deals, and there are other companies that are doing the same thing. You can shop around a little bit and get some good deals. But the one in particular that I like fishing, and it throws very nicely, is Reddington's RS4. And I call it a mid-price rod because you can get into it at about $299. And you can get it up to 13, you know, feet long, but it's in a, you know, variety of line weights. And it's a nice four-piece rod that you can pack along. So I think that's a real good one. But like I said, there's a bunch of options, you know, from a lot of good rod manufacturers right now. So a guy can look around and, you know, find the deals and do some research and get some additional information. But that's one I could tell you right now, if you went and got, you'd be happy with. And on the other end of the spectrum, I wanted to say that G. Loomis has a new rod line, the NRX, and they've got spay rods that throw like rockets, very expensive. But something to think about if you want to look at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, there's always both ends. Right? Yeah. Well, it's nice that we have a choice nowadays, and there are several manufacturers that have brought rods prices down significantly to where you're getting a good rod for a reasonable price. So now let's talk about lines. Frank Wood in Norwalk, California, he says, well, I need heavy sink tips on the Dean. What kind of lines are you fishing up there?
Well, I would definitely take some sink tips. You know, it's the Northwest. And the season on the Dean, you know, runs from late June into, you know, late August is the prime time. And you could see any kind of water condition at that time. So you're going to need sink tips. You could also use, you know, some floating heads up there, too, because I actually rode some fish to dry skated flies up on the Dean. And the next time I go up there, I'm definitely going to do that more often. It was hard to go away from, you know, light sink tips because we were catching so many fish. But as soon as I did go to the floating line, you know, I was immediately seeing fish come up for it. So something to keep in mind. But yeah, a variety of sink tips. And when you start getting into the spay game, it can seem overwhelming. You know, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? Well, I use a Skagit system. So I've got shooting heads, and Scientific Anglers is making a real good system right now in that department. I also bought a kit, a shooting head kit from Airflow that gives me a variety of grain weights on the shooting head so that I can match it up perfectly to my rod. And then onto that, you attach whatever grain, you know, sinking tip that you would like. And of course, your leader, and then, you know, goes on to that, and then the fly. It can get very, very confusing, and it can intimidate many people out of the spay game. And so here's what I like to recommend. And I had a fellow in Seattle, Washington, before I went up to the Dean, help me out on this, so credit goes there. He said, stop worrying about it. You know, I'm like, do I need this? Do I need that? Should I buy all of this stuff? He goes, stop worrying about it. You can buy standard sections of T14, and he did this for me. He cut me my sections, and I got a 15-foot section and a 10-foot section of T14. I got a 15-foot section and a 10-foot section of T10. I got a 15-foot section and a 10-foot section of T8. The T14 sinks super fast, the T10 slower than that, and the T8, of course, slower than that. So what I could do is change out my tips depending on the water conditions. And they changed a little bit while we were up there. So most of the time, I fished a 10-foot section of T10 and did just fine. And if I felt like I needed to get deeper, I put on a fly that had more weight. I tweaked my mend so that I could put a downstream loop in the line, which would then bring the fly across the water quicker if I felt like I was getting too deep. So really, by just using those sections and modifying your drift and the weight of the fly, you can really cover almost any situation. So my suggestion to people, no matter where you're going, carry light sections of T14, carry the heavier sections of T14, carry a variety of flies from unweighted flies and you know, then the floaters, you know, the skating flies, dry flies too, you know, down to just some rockets if you need it with, you know, big lead-eyed heads on them so you can get down, and that'll take care of you.
When you, at the beginning of this, when you start talking, you said you use a Skagit system. Would you just describe what you mean by Skagit system for people that aren't familiar with that?
Sure, it's a system that was, you know, developed by several noted steelhead anglers in the Northwest, and it's you know, very popular there because in you know, much of the area that you fish, you've always got, you know, brushy banks and trees hanging over and not much, you know, distance behind you. So it's a real heavy head that you can really achieve some long casts with, and you don't have to do much of a back cast. You don't have to go far behind you. So that's the system that I've really become comfortable with and I use. I do know that lots of anglers also use, you know, the Scandinavian heads, and I honestly couldn't tell you all the reasons and the differences between the systems. I just know it works for me. It's a Skagit head. I fish mostly in the Northwest, and I'm able to cast that thing, you know, a long way. So that's what I would recommend, just based on my experiences in the Northwest and on these fisheries that we're talking about tonight.
Okay, okay. So you moved back and forth between floating and sinking tip. Any reason to have any sinking line, total sinking line at all?
Well, I don't think so.
Okay.
You know, with these shooting heads, you know, they're floating lines. And then
right.
With the ability to vary the length of your section of T14, I mean, basically that's an entire section of sinking line.
Right.
And so you can vary the depth with that, and, you know, whether it's T14, T10, or T8. And again, you're men. So, no, I don't think there's any reason to have a full sinking line up there. Not at all.
Okay. And then what's the terminal tackle that you're using? Is it just straight leader to the fly? Describe how you get from the line to the fly.
You know, I'm more of a guy who feels like if you do your research and you watch the weather and you're on a stream that has fish and you're there at the right time, you know, right place, right time, that's the most important thing. So I'm pretty simplistic on terminal tackle. With the leaders, you know, I typically, you know, will run. Well, it just depends. I mean, if I don't want to be right on the bottom, you know, I'll use a longer leader. If I'm fishing a dry fly, skating it, you know, I might use a longer leader. But if I want to get on the bottom and I'm using, you know, or down low and I'm using sink tips, I'm going to use a relatively short leader. I'm going to use, you know, 3 or 4 feet. And you can get away with that, too, if the conditions are a little bit murky. And, you know, that'll work. If it's clear, low and clear conditions, I will go with a very light pound test leader, you know, down.
What's
to
light to you? What do you mean
8
light?
8 pounds.
8 pounds?
6 or 8 pounds. You know, I've fished steelhead on Vancouver Island in just super low and clear conditions and gone to 6 pound in small flies and done quite well when some of the people that used, you know, a standard steelhead, you know, poundage, which would be, you know, 14 or 15 pound leader and tippet and done better than them. So it just depends on the conditions, but I wouldn't be afraid of going down to 8 pound test in low water clear conditions. And I wouldn't be afraid, you know, in standard or high water conditions, you know, to go up to 15 pounds. I mean, steelhead aren't easy, you know. Sometimes on a trip, you're trying to get one fish. You're hoping for one fish. And so if you do get that fish, you want to have the heaviest tippet that you can get away with so that you can hold that fish once you do hook that thing. So
the other part of when you're using the sinking tip and trying to get that fly down is you don't want a really long leader because then your fly may be floating while your line is sinking, right?
Good point. It defeats the purpose. You want that fly as close as you can get away with to that sink tip so it's right down there low and coming across.
Let the tip do the work for you. Rather than
yeah, exactly. There was something I wanted to say earlier, and I guess it falls into this category, but regarding the tips, terminal tackle, flies, everything, the standard rule is that steelhead look up to feed. And so you want to err on the side of being too high in the water column versus too low. And that's especially true if you're going to fish these summer fish when the water temperatures are relatively mild and they're real aggressive and want to move. That would be any time, you know, from the July fish on into the late October fish. But if you're going to fish winter steelhead, you might want to drop it down further and try and get a slower presentation because the water temperature is so much colder at that time, the fish aren't as eager, you know, to move far for a fly, so you almost have to bump them on the nose or just put it right in front of them for as long as you can until they go, what the hell is that? It's pissing me off. And then they finally eat the thing, so.
Yeah. Question came in on the Internet, Nick in Sandy, Utah. He says, is the equipment the same for the lower 48s? Do you use the same equipment down in Washington and in Idaho?
Absolutely.
Okay, yep. So there's no reason to have anything different. It's just, yeah, steelhead equipment.
Those rods that you use up in British Columbia will work anywhere you find steelhead. The Skagit system, the shooting heads, and the sink tips, your money. You're golden if you use those down in Washington, Oregon, or Idaho, or even Northern California. Yeah, good to go.
Another question on the internet. Jim in Roswell says, does Greg have an opinion about Temple Fork or Beulah spay rot?
I have no experience with Beulah, but I have fished Temple Fork rods, and they're great. And I guess I look past it, but as far as, you know, mid-price point rod, Temple Forks are great. Quality rod, you know, good price, good company. They're going to be there. They've been around for a while. They're not going out of business. So if you have a problem, they'll help you out. Yeah, I've fished Temple Fork rods and done well with them.
Okay. Let's talk about flies. George from Gadsden, Alabama, asked, do you prefer nymphs, eggs, or streamers? Were you using up there?
Well, I don't even really consider streamers, you know, steelhead flies. Typically, I want to swing a fly if I'm fishing for steelhead. You know, that's kind of the ultimate experience in the sport, is to, you know, cast out and have the thing, you know, coming across the current. You've got a tight line, and when the fish takes, it just about yanks the rod out of your hand. It's a shock to the system and just a wonderful thrill. So usually what I'm going to use is just some type of classic steelhead fly. However, with that said, I'm a guy that will fish nymphs when I have to also, and there's a great rift between people who are hardcore. I will swing for steelhead, or give me swinging for a steelhead on a swinging fly, or give me death. And then there's the guys who are like, get your nose out of the clouds and fish a nymph when you have to, you know. And so I do both. I would always prefer to catch a fish on a swung fly. But in winter especially, there's some places where, you know, there are steelhead. There's no way you're going to reach them with a swung fly. They're not going to raise from low down in the water column to get up and grab something near the surface. So you put on a strike indicator, and you put on either a nymph or an egg, and you can drift that down along the bottom rocks with lead to help you get it down. And it's deadly. I mean, people crush steelhead in that method, and I've done the same thing. As far as the nymph or egg, I think, you know, steelhead eat eggs. They'll eat an egg all the time. And I fish a lot of eggs. I don't fish much on the nymph end of things. Closest thing I get to fishing a streamer for steelhead would be an egg-sucking leech. And that's just a tremendously productive fly for steelhead, no matter where you fish them. I fished that pattern tied, you know, real sparse for low water conditions, you know, where the rivers are running low and clear. And what I do is, you know, tie in a tuft of black marabou for the tail, and then I wind peacock hurl as the body, and I don't put much weight on the fly so that it's a very thin silhouette, but I do wrap a black webby hackle, you know, mostly around near the head of the fly, and then I just tie a super thin piece of pink chenille for the head, and then I use my split shot, you know, for the weight to get that fly down. And that thing just seems deadly to me in low and clear conditions. It's not so audacious that, you know, a fish will move away from it. They see it, and it doesn't intimidate them, but they're curious, and they come over and take a whack at it.
That egg-sucking leech is an interesting fly, and we used it a lot up in Bristol Bay, too. And, yeah, it's not anything that is real, but definitely an attractor pattern for them. Yeah. We need to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about flies and strategies and tactics they used up there. So hang tight with us, folks. Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's Fly Fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Greg Thomas about fly fishing for steelhead in the Queen Charlotte Islands and Dean River. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, a couple of questions still on flies and so forth. You said it before, you said a standard steelhead streamer. Are there any particular patterns that you favor?
Yeah, I don't fish a real broad variety of flies.
Let me correct that. Not streamers, but your swinging fly.
Sure,
sure. Steelhead swing. I'd rephrase that for you.
I caught that too, but...
Oh, okay.
Let it go.
You know what I meant.
I let it go. It's like rod or pole, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm a guy who doesn't feel like you need a massive amount of variety in your flies. I think you need a lot of flies because in steelhead fishing you can lose a lot of them quickly, especially if you're, you know, in winter when you need to fish them slow and get it down near the bottom. You know, there's plenty of snags and boulders and everything in these rivers, so you can lose a lot of them. So you need a lot of flies, but in my opinion, you don't need a lot of variety in patterns. You fish some patterns like an egg-sucking leech. You fish a pick-your-pocket. You fish a popsicle. You fish a pink and white marabou fly. You fish the egg if you're going to nymph. You know, those flies are going to catch a fish if the fish wants to eat. I don't think it's as much, you know, the fly as getting to a river where there's fish, being there at the right time, where the conditions are favorable, fishing hard, fishing confident, that even if you fish 3 days and you haven't touched a fish, if they're there, you're going to get a take. It takes a willing fish. You just have to put it in front of them. So, yeah, pick your pocket, popsicle, pink and white marabou fly, blue and black marabou is a killer, that egg-sucking leech, and then, of course, the egg, if I'm nymphing, is what I'm almost always going to use. So,
now, Jim Wright in Crescent City, California, asks about, is there any one consistent color of egg that seems to work more often, in, whether it be up there or in Washington or Idaho? Or?
Well, I don't like chartreuse.
I was thinking, come on, that works for everything.
I got
you know that.
I got desperate one time on the Salmon River, and I'd gone through my entire box of flies, and finally I was like, well, I haven't fished this, you know. Maybe this is what they're eating. And I tied this chartreuse egg on, and I was fishing that, and I brought it in one time. I'm like, Thomas, you're an idiot. I've never seen a chartreuse egg in my life. Why are you fishing this thing? And I cut it off. Guys tell me, oh, no, the chartreuse is killer. Again, I think this goes back, you know, to fishing what you're confident with. But I like, for an egg pattern, what I really do like, and this goes for trout in the Rockies, too, kind of a real subtle, like a mix of white and a soft pink. That coloration, I think, is great, and it really matches, you know, a natural egg in the water. And I think with steelhead, you know, they may still be just kind of hardwired that they remember that coloration of egg that they probably ate on when they were, you know, growing up in the freshwater rivers before they went out to the saltwater. So, yeah, I like a very light pink egg.
Jonathan in Oak Harbor, Washington, wants to know if you use the same flies in Washington as you would up in B.C. Same box? Take the same box?
Yep, just a variety.
Yeah.
And, a solid steelhead fly in the Queen Charlottes or on the Dean is going to work down there at Oak Harbor if he runs out to the coast and, you know, fishes the hoe or the queets or the sole duck, you know, any of those streams. Yep, you'd be good to go with those. One thing I forgot to say, one of my favorite patterns in the world is this classic fly called a green butt skunk, and I've caught a lot of steelhead on it. The only difference between the original version, which was a chenille tie body with a hair wing, is that I like a little bit more subtle. You can still go with the chenille or any of the more modern, you know, tinsel-type materials to do the green butt on the thing. But I like to go with a more webby black hackle, give the thing kind of space-style tie, and give the thing a little bit more movement in the water. But last year on the salmon, you know, everyone was fishing eggs, and they were catching some fish. And I decided, what the heck, I'm going to tie on this classic green butt skunk, and I'm going to fish it through the tail of this run. And I stayed right there all day, and I landed 10 steelhead. And that was during the winter when you wouldn't think that just that subtle, you know, fly, classic fly would work. So that green butt skunk I really like, too, and I've caught a lot of fish in Washington on it, too. So that's another one for people to think about. Fish it with the confidence, you know, and fish it hard.
Okay, let's see. Jerry in New York asks, he says, how is the steelhead fishing in Pacific Northwest different from steelhead fishing in New York State? You seem to use different flies than we do, and you fish them in the summer. We tend to fish for them in the fall, winter, and spring. Any comments on that?
Well, you know, out here in the Pacific Northwest, we're fishing for steelhead, and out there in the East, they're fishing for imposters. Now, listen, I say that tongue-in-cheek because a fish is a fish, and I'll tell you straight up, if I lived in the East and I wanted to fish steelhead, they've got some great runs out there, and I would be out there as often as I could. on the other hand, there's something romantic about fishing a fish in its native habitat, you know, and steelhead, you know, are native to the Pacific Northwest. There's something really cool about that to me. I have not been east to fish steelhead, so I'm not the one to be able to talk about, you know, the differences. I don't know, and I'm sorry that I haven't been out there yet. I've had a couple offers and haven't been able to make it, and I'm eager to get out there as soon as I can. But I would imagine they're similar. I think what I've heard is that, you know, those fish eat some of the same flies, and they'll definitely eat eggs, so, you know, it's not all difference between them. So.
Okay, Greg in Maine wants to know, what are considered good water temperatures up there, and when's the best run time of the year?
Well, if you want to fish summer run steelhead in the Northwest, you can find them as early as July. You know, one of the streams in Washington called the Klickitat has a pretty good early run. The Clearwater in Idaho is another one that gets some fish that bump into the lower section of that river near Lewiston, Idaho, earlier in the year. And the prime time probably runs from the latter part of September on through, you know, the first or second week of November, depending on weather conditions. If you want to fish winter run steelhead, you know, it really kind of kicks into gear in November. A lot of the steelhead rivers in the West, and if anyone wants to know more about this, you can go and check out the Wild Steelhead Coalition's website. They're doing great work trying to preserve steelhead, especially in Washington State, but in general in the Northwest. A lot of the early winter runs are now hatchery fish, which are inferior to wild fish, and you can find those in good numbers in December and January. The native fish on the winter steelhead runs, they really pour into the systems now in February, March, and April. So that would be the prime time for winter fish in the Northwest. And if you're going after the summer fish, your best bet would be, again, October and early November, although you can find them in some places as early as July.
Okay. And when you talk about winter versus summer, I know we had Duke from Ithaca, New York, asked a question online. It says, what's your fishing strategy for winter steelhead? Any tips for beginner winter steelheader? And what are the difference between fishing for summer versus winter steelhead? What do we need to know?
Well, it's tremendously different. Again, it comes down to the water temperatures. And, you know, in the summer and early fall, those temperatures are significantly warmer than what you'll find in the winter. So those fish are feeling frisky and good. They just come into the rivers. They'll move quite a ways for a fly. So I would fish them higher up in the water column with my fly. I would think about fishing them with dry flies, you know, skaters, and I would keep that fly moving, you know, relatively quick. With winter steelhead, water temperatures are lower. The fish usually sit in some deeper pools. I want to go slow and low with my fly, use heavier sink tips, get it down. And again, with summer fish, you can get away with a more sparsely tied fly. In the winter, typically people go with a bigger pattern, make sure that the fish can see it even if the water conditions are murky. And again, just fish it as slow as you can. Give those fish time to think, hey, maybe I should eat this thing, and then charge after it. So.
Okay. And we got a question from Mark. He says, I've been out for winter steelhead in the Vader River about 15 times, but can't seem to hook up with them. When you approach a stretch of water, what are you looking for, and where are you looking to place your cast?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, it's the Vader River.
Oh, Vader.
And what I would say to Mark is, hang in there, brother. Hang in there. Because I went through a couple seasons in Washington, you know, when I was first learning the fly and steelhead, and I ended up getting some grabs, but I don't know if I even landed a fish. It'll all come together, and when it does, everything will become clear, and you'll be much more successful. When I go to a stretch of water, I've fished trout. I've caught so many trout and fished so much trout that when I really switched over and started concentrating on steelhead, I would end up making the mistake of fishing high in a run, right where the rapid would drop into the choppy run and then into the pool. And I think with a fly, you're more likely to catch fish in the middle portions of the run, downstream from those rapids, where the water slows down a bit. And then, you know, and anywhere that you can find, you know, some boulders, you fish the heck out of those boulders. You fish, you know, each side of it. You fish in front of it. You fish behind it. And you fish it for a long time. You know, these steelhead, especially the winter fish, are looking for a break from the current. They want to get out of it and reserve some energy. Summer fish will hold, you know, on the seams, right where they're close to the fast water and that choppy surface, so that they aren't as vulnerable from predators from above. And they can rest just to the side of the fast current, reserve some energy, but they can move into that fast water and in amongst the, you know, deeper water and boulders if they feel threatened at all. And then finally, with trout, I rarely catch them in the tailouts, the super tailouts of a run. With steelhead, I have walked across the tailouts of runs not even thinking about steelhead, thinking that it's too shallow, no fish would sit back there. And the fact is that if you wanted to just pick one portion of steelhead runs that you would fish every day for the rest of your life and you couldn't touch the rest of the run, if you just concentrate on the tailouts, you'd do as well, if not better, than any of the other anglers. Those fish move through rapids and they sit on the tailouts of a run right above the rapids, conserving their energy before they move up into the deeper portions of the run where they find more shelter and security. And you just keep swinging across it, swinging across it, swinging across it. So I would tell you, Mark, you know, really look at those tailouts, really concentrate on those. And then beyond that, look at the, you know, the portion of the run where the water's really chopping and it starts to move down, slow the chop, and becomes walking speed water. That's where you'll find them. And if there's a boulder thrown into it, and if it's a gradual rocky bank that angles into the river, you know, those are the type of setups that you're looking for. And don't be afraid, Mark. Ask everyone every question you can. Ask them, you know, if you see other people on the water, go, hey, you fished here a lot? Yeah, I fish here all the time, you know. Well, I'm just learning. Can you suggest, like, on this run, would you suggest this spot or down here or up here? Don't be afraid to talk to your fellow angler and glean as much as you can from them.
Okay. Question off the internet. Duke in Ithaca, New York says, he says, this has to do with not only finding the right place, but getting to the depth. He says, when swinging the steelhead with various sink tips, T11, T14, etc., how do you know which depth the fish are? How do you get your fly to this depth? And how do you keep the fly at that level for the entire path of the swing?
Well, you don't know for sure. You know, it's always discovery when you come to a stream, whether it's new or if you've been there before. And so if you're not catching fish and you're high in the water column, you know, and you've gone through some water, you think, you know, there ought to have been a steelhead there. You go back through and you change things up and you fish a heavier fly, or you put on a longer and heavier section of T14. And, you know, the way you try and keep it at a level depth across the current is to, you know, adjust your mend, you know, to either throw a downstream mend into it, you know, to bring that fly, you know, faster across the water column and up, or to throw, you know, an upstream mend and let the fly, you know, sink. Another thing that I learned this year from Michael White, I mentioned him earlier, he's a great, you know, great angler and a great rep here in the Rockies, but he would throw a cast, you know, 45 degrees or even, you know, a little higher up than that cross stream from him. And as the thing landed, he would take a couple steps downstream, and that would allow, you know, no drag or friction on that line and fly and allow it to sink down a little bit before he actually started swinging it across the current and throwing the, you know, the proper mends depending on what depth he wanted. So that's really all you can do, and, you know, give that a shot.
Follow-up question from Rusty in Nevada. He says, do you swing the egg-sucking leech or dead-drift it?
You can swing the egg-sucking leech, and there's also a real, you know, similar pattern called the string leech with that, you know, that pink chenille head and either a purple rabbit strip or a black rabbit strip trailing, you know, behind it. You can swing it, and you can pick up fish for sure. And I've also dead-drifted it, you know, especially in those, you know, for the winter fish, that cold, clear water conditions, you know, under an indicator, a couple split shot, and just slowly working it through a, you know, a choppy run or down near the tail out or around boulders. You know, it's been pretty deadly.
Mm-hmm. Couple, we're running short on time here, but a couple more questions off the internet here. Duke and Ithaca, New York, sent in a whole slew of them. So,
well, I got some good ones. Quick, concise answers.
Yeah.
You want to.
This one is, could you name one critical factor that is crucial for a steelhead fly fisherman? You know, if you could, what would it be? What would be that one critical thing?
Well, I think everyone should have hip flask of Old Crow, so when it really gets cold or you wonder why you haven't had a grab in 2 days, you know, you're not going to end up shooting yourself or something. You can go sit on the bank. You can take a sip. You could light up a cigar. You can go, you know, look around, see the country. I mean, the Pacific Northwest is the most beautiful place in the world as far as I'm concerned, and kind of get your life back in order. But, you know, one critical piece of equipment, I don't know if it's just one, but, man, waiters that don't...
Factor, he says, critical factor, not necessarily equipment. But.
Okay, well, I mean, staying warm and dry so you can stay on the water and keep your fly on water is a huge thing. I don't know if there's one piece of equipment. You know, again, it goes back to equipment a little bit, but you know, he's saying one factor. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, no, listen, I'll tell you what. Have confidence.
There you go.
Have confidence and keep fishing that fly as if you know there's a fish in the river and that all you have to do is find the right one that wants to eat and he will eat that fly and don't doubt yourself.
Confidence is a big thing. One other question he had was, let's see here, as my computer just locks up on me. I believe his question was, you know, can you relay to us one great experience you had in catching a steelhead on the river up there?
Well, can I venture away from it for just a second and talk about a fish in southeast Alaska, which is the greatest steelhead I've ever caught?
Sure, yeah. Talk on.
Yeah, a friend and I were fishing in southeast Alaska on a stream that, you know, in southeast Alaska you don't get big fish. You get a lot of them that range from 6 to maybe 10 or 12 pounds at the most, which are big fish, but in steelhead terms are the giants. And I fished this stream. And at the time, my dad's an illustrator, and he illustrated the first Sage catalog, and part of the compensation for that was getting a 9-foot, 6-weight RPL rod that he gave me as my high school graduation present. First fly rod I owned. So I'm fishing that in southeast Alaska in the spring, and I hooked up on this fish with that rod and fought the thing. I don't know how long. I had to cross the stream twice and finally landed this fish, and we put a tape to it. And it was 42 inches long, and it was a buck, and the thing had this just massive back and shoulders on it, just phenomenal. And we shot this photograph with the old film camera, 35mm, rainy, dark day, and we released the thing, and we're like, we didn't take a girth or anything. And then we fished more that day, and by the time we got back to the skiff and we're headed back to town, we were like, God, did we really even catch that fish? I mean, was that real? And fortunately, the one photo turned out, and you figure that fish was 25 pounds or better, and so that's, you know, that's the grandest experience I've had in steelhead fishing. But I'll tell you what, that Dean River trip this year, as far as numbers and just a classic, fun trip, was just a great, great memory.
Terrific, terrific. Well, unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up for this show, but stick with us here, folks. We're going to be giving away a number of things here, including that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, $20 gift certificate, courtesy of Front Range Anglers, and some tickets to the ISE show here in Denver. So hang tight with us. We'll be right back. A mining company called Pac Rim Coal is planning a massive strip mine near Anchorage, Alaska. The Chewitna Coal Project would be the first project in Alaska history to mine directly through a salmon habitat, the Chewitna River drainage. 11 miles of it. Critical commercial, sport, and subsistence fishing economies would be permanently destroyed. Pac Rim says it can rebuild a salmon stream, but scientific experts can find no example where successful restoration has occurred after strip mining. Chewitna coal would be shipped to Asia, leaving Alaska with nothing but devastated habitat and ruined salmon runs. It's time to stop the Chewitna coal strip mine. For more information on how you can help, visit inletkeeper.org, that's inletkeeper.org, or trustees.org, trustees.org, and you can see how you might be able to help out there. But just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. So now it's time to give away a few prizes. Winners for our drawings are randomly selected from this show's registration database, and if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do for the next show, because we're always giving away some great prizes. Now, if you're the lucky winner, the drawing will contact you after the show and provide you with the information on how to receive your prize. So the first thing we're going to give away is one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, which is a great organization to support. And their website is fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. So let's see here. Our computer says our winner is Tom Mann in Texas. So you get a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And, Tom, if you already have a membership, we'll get that extended for you. So congratulations. And our second giveaway is for a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, which you can learn more about it at flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. Great magazine out of Calgary, Canada. And our winner for that is Bob Heptenstall, Bob Heptenstall in Alberta. So congratulations, Bob, on winning that one-year subscription. So now, what I've got to do here, Greg, is clear my queue. Let's see here. And we'll ask a question to see who gets a $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers. And the question is going to be, Greg mentioned when we were talking about lines and systems, a particular kind of system that he uses. Name that system, that line system that he uses. And we'll see here, Greg. We can get a winner of that $20 gift certificate.
Okay.
And looking here, looking. These guys tie flies as slow as they type. They should start buying flies. Okay, here we go. I think we might have it here. This person says Skagit system. Is he correct?
Yep, that is the answer.
That's the answer. So Doug Banas, B-A-N-A-S, in Vancouver Island, B.C. You just got yourself a $20 gift certificate. Be sure to send me your contact information. You can type it in that same box you just answered the question in, and you'll be able to order something online from Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado, frontrangeanglers.com. But send me your name, your email address, your contact information so that I can get that to them and they can get you your certificate. So congratulations. Well, now we've got still some things to give away tonight. We've got some, and I'm just going to use my database to try to find some folks here in Colorado, because these tickets are for the Colorado ISE show, so obviously it's not going to do people much good if they're other parts of the world. My first winner there is Bro Viking in Colorado. We're going to give you two ISE tickets, and I will send you an email, and what you'll do is just go down to the ISE show, go to Will Call, tell them your name, and they'll know who you are, and they'll give you those two tickets. We'll get another one going here, and that would be, let's see if we can find another winner here. A lot of people not in Colorado. And I'm having trouble getting people in Colorado. How about Australian?
Hey, I know we're about ready to wrap up. Can I say something while you're looking?
Sure, go ahead. Start talking while I keep looking for...
I don't know how the shows end, but I just wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to tell everyone out there listening that thanks for joining in, and I hope that it helped a lot. Make sure you guys get the Angler's Tonic and check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. And then if anyone wants to read more about that Dean River trip I took, it is coming out right now in the current issue of Fly Rod and Reel.
Oh, terrific. That'd be a great, great way to follow up the show when they could learn more and see some pictures.
Yep.
So, good.
Oh, one last thing. Andrew Bennett at BC West, he only has 5 positions left for the Dean this year. So if you want in, you should call Andrew Bennett or go visit the website, which is www.deniki.com.
Great, great. Can you spell that again?
Yeah, D-E-N. D-E-N-E-K-I.
Okay. Okay,
or people can just type in BC West, Google BC West, and they'll come up.
Okay. Well, it looks like I'm not the database. I'm not getting... Oh, here's one. David Bohn, B-O-H-N, in Colorado. A couple of tickets for you, David, if you'd like to attend. We'll call. Just give them your name, and we'll get you a couple tickets to the ISE show. So, well, we're able to give away a few tickets here to the ISE show, and anybody else is listening, if you want to, I missed you on that, and if you are in Colorado and would like a couple free tickets, email me at info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com, and say you were listening to the show, and I'll hook you up with some tickets. So, well, yes, and thank you so much, Greg, for being on the show tonight. I really appreciate, you know, the time you spent in pulling away from the ISE show. I know time is of value at this point, but thanks for being with us.
Yeah, Roger, I appreciate it, and it's not being pulled away from the ISE show at this time of night. My friends are waiting down in the bar.
All right, well, party on, and have a great show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Our next podcast will be on January 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and on that show we'll interview Pudge Kleinkopf, and our topic for the show will be grayling on the fly. Budge has fished and guided all over Alaska for salmon, trout, char, and sheefish, but the one fish that has always been special to her is the Arctic grayling. Budge will share her insights and fly fishing secrets to catching this intriguing and graceful fish. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Front Range Anglers, the Platte River Fly Shop, and Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.